This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues. Tan Chung Han, Julian Ng, and myself, Sharad Kutin. Just to remind you, after the 8 o'clock news, we're going to be having the breakfast grill. Melissa Idris speaks to William Hon, founder and managing director of BioAlpha Holdings, which is an integrated herbal supplements producer and has been listed on the ACE market since 2015. I don't know if you guys are imbibers of things like medicinal mushrooms, Tongkat Ali, Kacip Fatima, and collagen beauty products. No, I don't think so. Well, you all look quite beautiful
maybe in your natural state. Maybe in about 20 years. I think future market prospects here. There we go.
Yeah, I think that this wellness industry can't be denied. Everyone is jumping on the bandwagon. There's no less driven by the distrust in big pharma, right? No longer people would consider going to the pharmacy as a kind of a default reaction when they have something wrong with their bodies. They want to consider the alternatives right now. And in the past, we also have interviewed these alternative treatment companies like Yu Yansang, and they are also riding on that wellness wave.
But the keyword there is alternative, though. You know, whether or not they have the same kind of following that mainstream medicine and the science that purportedly backs mainstream medicine right there. You know, I don't know if it's enough to assuage consumers.
Fears and doubts. Yeah. Well, clearly it is. It's a huge multi-million, billion-dollar industry. Moving on to the story that of AirAsia, it actually made itself to the front pages of the Straits Times. No wrongdoing, says AirAsia Group. That's on the front page of the New Straits Times this morning. The Malaysian budget carrier has denied wrongdoing after an inquiry into corruption at Rolls-Royce found that its employees had bribed an AirAsia executive with a $3.2 million plane maintenance discount.
Well, the AirAsia clarification is actually technically correct, but I don't know if it completely absolves them of responsibility of this whole thing. Because if you look at what the SFO, which is the UK's Serious Fraud Office findings, they say that the wrongdoing is in the act of an employee of AirAsia negotiating for the private jet of Tony Fernandez or Kamarudin Murano, the private shareholders of AirAsia. And that is the wrongdoing. One single employee negotiating for benefits in order to buy an engine for the private interests of AirAsia. And at the same time, while that was happening, some engine negotiations was going on between AirAsia, the listed company, and Rolls-Royce. So there was that coincidental convergence of negotiations.
Now, just to set the context here, it's not just AirAsia. Several other airlines across the region were also named in this probe. So even in China, Thailand, and Indonesia as well. But just to give you some numbers, I like my numbers, to lend weight to the significance of this story, you've got AirAsia shares that fell 5.43% yesterday from 2.58 ringgit per share over the weekend down to 2.44. So, yeah, markets certainly reacting to this piece of news.
AirAsia's had some other kind of run-ins in the past, haven't they? AirAsia India in particular. Do we know what became of that story that involved the Tata Group?
Now, those were allegations that were forwarded by Cyrus Mistry, who was the estranged chairman of a lot of Tata interests in India. And he was saying that there were some questionable payments made by AirAsia India, which is a joint venture between the Tata Group and the Malaysian airline. Between Tata Group and AirAsia. And also, Tata has also alleged some ethical and governance breaches at India's largest conglomerate. So a lot of allegations here which are unconfirmed.
Yeah, and that was last year. So also the Rolls-Royce ones were from a few years ago. Now, if you go back to 2015, you'll also remember how the accounting practices at AirAsia, those were called into question by a report by GMT Research, basically saying that there were some dubious accounting practices, even back then. Again, if you want to go back to the numbers here, AirAsia shares fell to 87 cent a share back then. So it has climbed a long way since then, 244, you know, as of yesterday. And I will take a look at how they, they function in about an hour plus for now. Yeah.
Okay. Also, in a related, well, not related, but on the theme of corruption, Ananda Krishnan and his point man Ralph Marshall have been ordered by the Indian Supreme Court to appear before them or face financial consequences.
Yeah, so this stems from the proposed merger between Aircel and also Reliance Communications. These are basically two telco operators and are players in the Indian space. And so the allegations come from, also involve the former Indian Minister of Communications and Information Technology, Dayanidhi Maran, and also his brother, Kalanithi Maran. So yeah, essentially...
The Maran brothers.
Yeah, so... they did make it a point that this does not have anything to do with Ananda's entities here. No, I'm talking Maxis and Astro. These were his, these allegations again, are with his purported dealings in the Indian space. And it's been going on for a while now. So it appears that this court demand that Ananda Krishnan show up is the latest in what has been a long-standing saga.
Actually, this is about underpaying for the 2G spectrum, and I think it is implied that the Maran brothers also got some benefit out of that too. It is alleged the detriment of the Indian people. And what kind of recourse do the Indian authorities have? Because the Attorney General's chambers here have decided not to respond to the summons that are being made, because they claim that under the mutual assistance criminal matters, there were some conditions and requirements in there that were not fulfilled. So they are choosing to ignore this. But I think this is going to be ignored at the peril of Max's owner, Ananda Krishnan, because the summons actually state that if there are any financial losses that are being declared, for example, if the government, let's say, and these are my words, if the government confiscates the profits, then Ananda Krishnan and his interests would not have recourse to those kind of actions taken by the Indian government.
Now, just zooming out real quick, though, you know, given the kind of news story that we're seeing, not just this Ananda, and also we got to mention Ralph Marshall, his right hand man, is also mentioned in this. But when you look at these dealings, when you look at the allegations against AirAsia, and then more recently Iris as well, what does it tell you about the state of doing business? Cross-border business, right? Is bureaucracy, you know, so stifling that these Malaysian corporates have to resort to such measures, in order to facilitate these deals? I'm not justifying it in any way. Don't get me wrong. I want to make that very clear. But, you know, the frequency of these headlines is certainly a very, very worrying trend.
I think the internet helps as well in passing around this kind of information and encouraging people to, you know, spurring people to open these conversations about the accountability of our, not only our political leaders, but now our business leaders as well. Because, you know, political activism is a crowded space. But now people are beginning to think about whether our corporate leaders are responsible, having that kind of responsibility, right? Because corruption is bad for the nation. It takes money, it siphons money out of the nation, money that can be used for other social programs.
I mean, one of the things that you hear all the time and, you know, on the corruption story, the smoke, as it were, before you discover the fire, is either underpayment, or overpayment, right? I mean, we see in the Mara Melbourne property story, overpayment here, story. Perhaps of underpayment. Again, it all signals that something might be up. EcoWorld and the Employees Provident Fund have teamed up for their third joint venture together, this time to jointly develop two townships in Batu Kawan, Penang.
Yeah, so this is the third project that EcoWorld and EPF have joined together and worked on. Just to give you some context here, the previous two were for the Bukit Bintang City Centre and also the Eco Grandeur and the Eco Business Park 5 or V in Ijok. And also, again, so it looks like these two are very happy doing business here. But I think the angle I want to focus on is for the EPF, because it affects, you know, all EPF account holders, I'm sure all of us included. And, the overall investment theme for the EPF moving forward is that they want to expose their assets under management to more into the real estate side, because they have about 4 to 5% of their portfolio.
Less, I think.
Yeah, about that. So, again, hopefully they can grow that segment of the pie.
What about the just to get everybody kind of on the same page in terms of geography? Batu Kawan is on the mainland of Penang, and it's that part of Penang State which is where the second bridge is. Would that be correct? Is that where Batu Kawan is?
Yeah, I think not only the second bridge, but also the second phase of the development of Penang, because massive property development have been slated over there, including, I believe, one of the largest IKEA centers in the world.
I mean, I was just going to say that.
You know, if IKEA can build one of the largest centers there, it must say something about the strategic positioning of that location. But also going back to whether this is good business for EPF, I think so, because their role in this kind of thing that does not go beyond what is financial, because they have a competitive advantage in access to very good funding. And it would allow them to get higher returns and higher profits than, say, just investing in a property company or investing in a portfolio of REITs.
But then given the, you know, development risks, you know, we've already seen an oversupply overall in the you know, residential space. You know, so for them to go into these two townships, granted, IKEA will be a massive attraction for the Batu Kawan area. To be fair to Batu Kawan, you know, they've also got some low-cost housing projects going on right there as well. So something for everyone in Batu Kawan, it appears. You know, but again, you know, given the development risks that are being undertaken, we should certainly, you know, proceed cautiously. Yeah.
Of course, I think that you need to balance out the risk and returns. I mean, the whole raison d'etre of EPF is to take risks in order to get returns, right? So they have a range of financial instruments in their portfolio ranging from the high risk, high return to the low risk, low return in terms of bonds. So property is one that sits somewhere in the middle, okay risk, okay returns. But I think EPF is in a position to enhance this return by going into a strategic relationship with EcoWorld. And I think it's all about diversification anyway. But one thing that I am, let's call this my bone to pick about EPF, right, is that it is still very much a ringgit-dominant investment. 75% of its AUM still in ringgit assets. And the question is whether Malaysians can still have addressed their retirement sufficiency problem with the ringgit like going the way it is and EPF's investment policy.
Okay, we also look at the question of jobs, very big in the US and also Malaysia. Despite the job cuts rates since 2009, it appears Singapore is still one of the easiest countries in the world to find work.
Yeah, so just 8 weeks to find a job in Singapore if you happen to be in between jobs. But if you compare it to other developed economies, say Australia, 17 weeks over there. In the US, it's about 10. Although I think the question was posed to me earlier today, you know, I wonder what Malaysia's range would be like. What do you think? Would you guys?
Well, you know, when you consider that a lot of people find work in, say, things like Grab or Uber to fill that time, it's the number of people I've spoken to, you know, this is just anecdotal, that need to drive taxis, you know, because they're looking for work. But this survey does not include Malaysian numbers?
No, it does not. It mainly on the developed economies, yeah.
Okay. I think we also have to say something about the quality of the jobs in these respective countries. With Malaysia, I know that the unemployment rate is very low. A lot of people have jobs. The question is, you know, also drawing from a recent World Bank report, whether we have jobs that are of quality.
Okay, coming up next, The Bulletin, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.